Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Kimberly Rampersad, Associate Artistic Director of the Shaw Festival. Located in the picturesque town of Niagara-on-the-Lake, Canada, just 45 minutes from Buffalo, the Shaw Festival is dedicated to showcasing a diverse range of plays from the late 19th century to contemporary works. Named for the influential Irish playwright and critic George Bernard Shaw, the festival embraces both tradition and innovation. Kimberly Rampersad is in her 10th season at the festival. In 2025, she is directing and choreographing the musical Anything Goes, and directing Ella and Louie in the Spiegel Tent, and Blues for an Alabama Sky in the Jackie Maxwell Studio Theater. In this interview, Kimberly and I talk about the interconnection between the plays she is directing, the power of musical staging, and the importance of keeping borders open. I hope you enjoy my interview with Kimberly. Kimberly Rampersad, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
My pleasure, Daniel. I'm well. How are you?
I'm very, very well. I'm so thrilled that you were able to make some time to speak with me today, considering how busy you are at the Shaw Festival this season. How are you sort of staying afloat?
You know what? You don't think about it. You just show up and do it. And then I'm fortunate that I work with some of the most incredible, energetic, thoughtful, prepared people. So sometimes it's just as easy as getting out of the way. I would like to think that it's more than that, but sometimes on my lowest days, then I have to be generous enough to say, wow, I'm working at a different capacity and to really continue to let others shine.
Thank you for your candor with that answer. You mentioned the company at Shaw, and Shaw is a rep company, right? And it's one of the only two in North America that still exist. For our listeners, could you describe what a rep company is? And could you maybe tell us how it's special or how does it impact the audience?
Of course, I'd be happy to. So in a repertory company, you have a core group or a group of actors and designers that come with them and stage managers that are finite, that are fixed, but they do at least two or more shows within an offering in a season, which means that everybody has at least two different shows in their bodies, whether it be crew, a lot of the designers, not all of them, but the actors, especially some of the directors, we all stage managers, especially, they have two shows within the season. I think what's exciting about it is being able as an audience member to see actors play two different parts in one day or two different parts and contrary parts while they're there for their stay. So there's somebody like Mary Antonini who's playing Reno Sweeney in Anything Goes, but then is playing Delia Patterson in Blues for an Alabama Sky. And her characters are like chalk and cheese. They could not be more opposite to one another. And I think that it's a thrill to be able to see an actor sort of, you know, use their chops that way in a single day.
It's also incredible, too. I completely agree to see as an audience member how the space changes, because each of these shows has its own sort of individual set, individual design, individual lighting, individual stage management team that has to call the cues. And so you can see a show at one theater at the Shaw Festival, go to dinner and come back and have a completely different sort of experience.
Wonderful. If you go into the Royal George and you see tons of money and you see this gorgeous living room that Judith Bowden has in there. And then you come back and you see Major Barbara, where all of a sudden now Jillian Gallo has like the most extraordinary set in there that is so sculptural. It's like a piece of sculpture that's in there. And those two sets are so different, both in the same space, but make the space feel so unique to each play. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. And it's wonderful to also understand how they have to break apart those sets so that they can fit backstage for the other one. So I'm also thrilled to witness like the ingenuity of Leslie Tumner, who is the head of our shops, and the the science that it takes, the mathematics that it takes in order to take a set apart and then to put it in a corner that can only take up X amount of square feet so that the other set can go in. Like, that to me is wonderful. It's like there are parts for everybody. If they want to make theater, there are engineers are here, plumbers are here, like all kinds of craftspeople, tradespeople, artists. Like, it's just, I love it. I love it.
Well, you mentioned Anything Goes, which you directed this season, and I was lucky enough to see it, and I had the best time a number of weeks ago. I actually saw you there and we said hello. I'd love for you maybe to explain to our audience what the plot of Anything Goes is.
The plot of Anything Goes is following Reno Sweeney, a nightclub singer, as she boards this yacht, as she boards this cruise ship, excuse me, and she travels from New York to London and the hijinks that happens on this boat. It is really, you know, it's pre-golden age of musicals. So it's coming at a time where the Busby Berkeley musical, the talking pictures, vaudeville, music halls, all kind of still collide in this place and formed also with a great big influence of what's happening uptown in Harlem, in the Cotton Club, in the kind of music that we're listening to, in the dancing, the tap dancing that's there. So it's a great big collision of what is happening in this feeling of decadence, but also the great disparity of what's happening in the Great Depression.
You know, you mentioned the character Reno Sweeney, and when I saw the play, I've seen a number of productions of Anything Goes, and I always feel like there's this sort of part of Reno where they talk about her as an evangelizer, and in other productions, I'd never really seen it kind of explained or what it was, and I felt like in this production, I finally understood what exactly she was evangelizing, and it just opened up a completely new layer of the piece for me. Would you mind speaking about that?
Sure. So for me, especially, Reno is talking about the new woman, as Shaw speaks about, because it's also Mary Antonini, who's a Black actor, a mixed race actor. She is also, too, for me, the new Negro that they speak of in the Harlem Renaissance, because she was originally played by Ethel Merman, who was really about freedom of expression and freedom being a woman. This is what Reno Sweeney is talking about. She's talking about free to love, free to inhabit one's body, free to express oneself. And especially in this play, for women to feel free and confident with their sexuality. And this is what she's evangelicalizing. And so it was really important to be like, that's why her women are so strong, why her women stride, why her women, the women that she hangs out with.
The angels, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's what she is. She is a single female who is a business owner who hires four other women, and they travel unaccompanied, unchaperoned as five businesswomen making their living and traveling free and traveling first class. That is so disruptive and so interesting and so sexy to me. And watching Mary play that part, watching those four women play those angels with that sort of freedom. And so then when we go into Blow Gabriel Blow, and she's talking about seeing the light and being free, and you see them at the end when it's like the Holy Spirit descends upon them and they speak in tongues. In this, they are all liberated. They are liberated to be themselves. They're liberated sexually. They're liberated intellectually and to become a higher version of themselves. And so that's what she's preaching.
Yes, it was so clear. Like I said, I've never seen it before. I've always felt like this sort of evangelical sort of idea of what she's evangelizing is never dealt with. And in your production, I thought, oh my gosh, that is it. And it is thrilling to watch.
Yeah, I've always felt or seen that in the show when ever since I've, wow, how old was I when I first saw it? I don't know, maybe 12. But I've always had this version inside of me that I've thought that it's also been. So when you get a chance as a director to get a piece that's lived with you for so long, and you're like, I think I have something else to say, or I think this play is also saying something else and I'd like to explore it, that's a real gift.
Well, it was a lovely gift to receive in the audience. I'd also love to talk about Anything Goes in terms of the direction and musical staging, because I think for our audience, maybe we can talk a little bit about what musical staging it is, how it's maybe different than, you know, choreography, just dance, because there's also storytelling. And in this version of Anything Goes, I was amazed by the sort of breadcrumbs that are happening throughout the musical storytelling that you've crafted that tell the story, enrich it, and give it this incredible logic as you track through. Specifically, one of the moments I'm thinking of, I think, is in Blow, Gabriel, Blow, of that first connection. I don't want to sort of ruin it for our listeners, but seeing that, I thought, wow, oh my gosh, there it is. Can you speak maybe on the what that practice is, or how musical staging is maybe different than choreography, or how you find the storytelling in it?
I would like to think that I've been an all right choreographer, but I hope that if anything, my choreography has improved because my work as a director has improved. So I don't leave my director's hat when I choreograph, but neither do I take off my choreography hat when I'm directing. But certainly there has to be a storyline through these pieces so that they don't feel like bad dance competition numbers. So I always have to start and I'm like, okay, well, where are we going in the story? And also, what can this musical number share that is not on the page, but is essential to the storytelling? And that's one of the codes that I and Matt Alfano, who was our associate choreographer, that we had to crack. Why is this number necessary? What does it unearth, or what does it reveal that isn't in the lyric, that isn't on the page, but will necessarily enrich where we are going right now? So that's always been a lot of fun. And it is really fun when you see Reno trying to bring people together, when you see her, you know what I mean? When we don't want to give too much of it, but you see what's happening and you see characterizing, you see what's happening between Mrs. Harcourt and Elisha Whitney. Like, you see all of these other storylines that are happening within this number. That's always exciting for me too. And I hope satisfying for the actors too, that they know that it's not just an ensemble number, but I'm thinking of, and Matt is thinking of, each of their characters and how they should change from the beginning of this number to the end, so that even though there are unison moments, they all feel that there are still their own individual characters on a journey within those moments. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I mean, and such incredible music to do it to, right? Cole Porter really wrote some incredible songs. And it's shocking when you sit and Anything Goes and you listen to it, and you think, oh my gosh, I know this song, I know this song, I know this song. And they're being performed at really the top level, you know?
Hit after hit. Like, Paul Sportelli and that orchestra are nuts. I can't get enough of it. I love listening. Like, the overture is a thrill in itself to me. I'm like, that's worth my ticket right there. But you know what I mean? And Paul, he reorchestrates everything, with knowing then how many musicians he has, who's doubling up. So I believe we have 14 glorious musicians in there, but he writes every part. And then he's some, Tom Skublix, who is in the orchestra, he scribes everything, almost everything for us. It's really intense. So then by the time we're done, Paul has reorchestrated it for our orchestra, who perform it beautifully. But these are some of the top musicians in Canada, as you can imagine. Like, I listen to Jazz FM and I hear them on Jazz FM. Then they're hosting shows, and like, they are the most amazing artists. And then you go into Toronto and you hear them, you know, playing at the Rex, and then they're here doing these gorgeous quartets and coffee concerts. Like, we could have another episode, honestly, truly, about the musicians who work at the Shaw Festival and what Paul Sportelli is cultivating here in terms of music culture with Ryan D'Souza, the associate. It's amazing.
Well, I think that that's a perfect kind of transition to the next thing I'd like to talk about, which is another production that you directed, which is Ella and Lewis. Can you talk a little bit about Ella and Lewis for us?
I sure can. So this one is created by Alana Bridgewater and Jeremiah Sparks, who are two artists who have been here for several seasons, and they're playing the title characters, Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong, respectively. And it's really sort of capitalizing on the programming that we seem to be excelling at in the Spiegel Tent. And for any of your listeners who maybe have not been here before, it's this gorgeous mirrored tent that we rent from this company in Belgium. They shipped it over and we put it up every year and then we store it. And it's gorgeous in the round. You walk inside and it really is a Spiegel tent with all of the beautiful glass around it. It's in the round and there are booths and tables and you can get drinks during all of the performances. And it's really feels like a grown and sexy club. So there we are in there doing Ella and Louis and Michael Shand, who is a preeminent musician and in Canada is playing Oscar Peterson. And he is the music director of it. And it's a hoot. It's such a beautiful, beautiful show that they have created and that they're executing.
What will we hear and what have audiences said, wow, after during their performances?
You can hear everything from A Wonderful World to A Tisket, A Tasket to some Cole Porter tunes that are in there. Cause I always love it when there's some pinging between different shows and it's fun because I have three shows this year. I have a lot of pinging between all three. So you can hear all kinds of beautiful shows like this, that come from their songbook. A lot of great American standards that are filled with a lot of nostalgia. And then what's really lovely is when you get to the end, the dance floor opens up and I love it. So you can see people up there dancing together. And I put that there indulgently because my parents dancing together is one of my most favorite things to watch in the world. And when we were putting this show together, I was like, oh, my parents would love this. My parents would love this show. And they always dance. They are wonderful social dancers. And my sister and I would love watching them dance. So I thought, well, if my parents were here, I would want them to have something that they would dance to. So there's dancing at the end and it makes me very happy.
That is beautiful. How is the Spiegel tent like maybe a great entry point for people who are new to the Shaw?
Ooh, I love it because that's exactly what I think it is. If you're new and you're not sure, I think because it feels less intimidating somehow. You know what I mean? It feels like it's a nice mix between theater and sport in the sense where the lights don't come down all the way. So we feel okay to move about. And also because it's in the round, it's not just audience up looking at the stage like in a proscenium. You can see one another enjoying it, which I think allows for a casual nature. Also, the bar is open for a bit for, you know, for a soft drink or a snack or a chocolate bar or a drink. And I think that that's all really nice because sometimes there's the idea or the attitude that theater is formal or stuffy or rigid. All of that plus music. Music is theatrical, and certainly we're presenting it in theatrical setting and with, you know, some narrative and within the container of something that feels like the work that we do here. But music just has a power of its own, as we all know. And sometimes the music is the thing that can lead them to being curious if they have a good experience here, to be like, what else are they doing at the Shaw Festival? But if not, that offering is fine, like not even fine. That's great. It doesn't need to be anymore. We don't have to be everything to everybody respectfully, not because we don't want to, but we just know we can't be. We are limited. So all we can try and do is offer as many ways, though, into us. That is within our power, and it behooves us to try and be accessible.
Mm. Thank you. The final show you're directing this season is Booze for an Alabama Sky by Pearl Klieg, which is one of those plays that, you know, I have heard about. I first heard about it when I was at the University of Texas at Austin. People saying this play is incredible. This play is amazing. And from what I understand, it is such a beautiful piece of dramatic literature. Can you tell us a little bit about the play?
It's gorgeous. I find that it's written in the great traditions of many modern American playwrights. When I read it, I think Tennessee Williams. I think August Wilson. I think Lorraine Hansberry. I think of these playwrights. It's searing. It's beautiful. It's of a time. The leading character, Angel Allen, like she feels like Blanche DuBois to me. Do you know what I mean? Like she is just filled with life.
Yep.
and filled with passion, filled with angst. Like, is she, it feels beautiful and hot and uncomfortable and joyful and musical, because Pearl Cleach has written this in 1930s in Harlem. So, you know what I mean? It's right at the Great Depression, but just like we were talking about earlier with the show, it's also when the Cotton Club and the Harlem Renaissance and Langston Hughes. So all of these ideas are happening in there. We talk about Margaret Sanger and, you know what I mean, and what it is for family planning, the church, all of these things colliding, a lot like James Baldwin in the Amen corner. Like, all of a sudden you can see how all of the programming that TC has been doing recently, especially in the 5 or 6 years, like how they all tumble into one another. And all of a sudden I think, oh, I can't wait for our audiences to experience this, because if they have been with us, or some of them with us for along the way, they are going to be like, oh, I know where this is. I know where this is placed. I'm familiar with these ideas. We're building on their knowledge of plays that deal with this material and with this subject matter. So I really like that, because that's so satisfying when you can see people draw their own connections to the work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. The play is being performed in the Studio Theater, right? The Jackie Maxwell Studio Theater. And I'd love for you maybe to speak just briefly on the intimacy of that space, and maybe how it could differ, or how sort of it's different from directing a large musical on a proscenium stage.
Got it. It's my favorite space, I've got to tell you, because there are no lies on any stage, but there are no lies. There are no lies in this space. It is unforgiving in all of the right ways. It demands all of the rigor of everybody, but absolutely of the director. You've got to bring your best, because otherwise that space will eat you up. And that to me is thrilling. It is thrilling. It's terrifying and it's thrilling. So because it's in the round, you have to be directing for all sides all the time, which puts everybody in motion. And so that to me is delightful, because I have, because dance is my first language and movement is the thing that I do. I feel very at home in that. It doesn't mean that I'm always going to crack the code, but I have at my disposal some freedom and some knowledge in terms of what it is that we can maybe do or attempt to do in the space. It's terrific, because we also, Ting Urquhart, who is our set and costume designer, has really made the two apartments where the main action happens in this play, has put them on the stage. So most of the time in the Studio Theater, the design has been very minimal or sparse or abstract, and it is not in this play. In this play, when you're in the kitchen, you're in the kitchen. Mm. In the sewing room, you're in the sewing room. And like, you will see the lamps turn on. You will see that there's real heat to the hot plates. You will smell the coffee as we make it on the stage. Those things I really thrill at, because I love being able to showcase everything that everybody does here. So to be able to showcase what props does here, what's the set building and the shop still do here, because people can see that all really close. Like when they're walking into the theater, you will see all of the pamphlets and newspapers that are printed of the time with real material. There's no stand-in, there's no sort of dummy, everything is as it should be. Like that to me is excruciating, almost perfection in all of the right ways, that everybody is just so excellent. So it's much more natural. It will seem jumbled in there. Like it's really dense in there. There's lots of obstacles that all of the actors have to work through and over. That was very challenging for them, but that is life. And I didn't want clean paths for them. I was like, this will be a live obstacle every single show, and you don't know how it's going to work out. So you will be present. And now they thrill on it. At first there were some, you know, and well, as there should be, some clenched jaws, because I'm just like, that's what it is. I'm not making it easier for you. But they are all five of those actors are made of such stuff that they would clench their jaw, but they'd look at me and they'd be like, of course it is. Of course, this is what you're going to do to us. And then they turn it on me and they're like, ha ha, look at the, you know what I mean? The gold that I've found in it. And I'm just like, well, well done you. So I'm not trying to pooch the actors, but what I am trying to do is create the circumstances where the most electricity can happen. Yep. So yeah, so it's really good. It's close, 360. And I love, again, like the Spiegel tent, that the audience can see one another. And it's neat when you can see somebody watching the play or hearing something differently from you. It cues your ear a little more because you could see somebody, you're like, oh, what was that you just enjoyed? I didn't catch that. And now all of a sudden you want to tune in. I want to listen to how you're listening to it as well. There are such good signals that we get from one another by watching one another while we're witnessing the play. It's so good.
Thank you. Do we have time for two more questions? I know that we're running a little long, but I want to
just make sure. I'm sorry. I just ramble on.
No, I could speak to you all day. And there are other questions, like we're sort of driving down this amazing highway and I'm like flinging questions out the window going because the interview is so great and you are so generous with all of your answers and so candid with all of your answers. And so I really appreciate that. We mentioned that you have been directing three pieces this season and you sort of referenced this earlier, and it's always exciting in an interview when someone sort of references a question before it's asked. So I'd love to ask, how has directing these three pieces informed or affected each other?
I hope in a practical way that working on Anything Goes and working on Ella has left me sharpest for Blues for an Alabama Sky. I think what I am remarking in all of these plays are especially the strong women. I'm always touched by, you know, as I mentioned before, the new woman in the Fabian Society, and so such an important theme in Shaw's work and in this play, and in these plays, actually, the Harlem Renaissance giving birth to the new Negro, and how similar these two themes are coming from two socialist movements, two democratic movements, two movements that want to uplift second-class citizens, women, and Black people in the United States in particular, in the two movements respectively. And I'm always interested in where these things collide and then what happens from it. I love that in Anything Goes, you kind of follow this one character, Angel. I'm sorry, Reno. See the slip? And you see what happens when she goes downtown, when she goes downtown to Broadway and crosses the river. And she wants to get out. And so then she does. But then you stay uptown and you have Angel who isn't getting out. And you say, but they're both in show business. They are both club singers. They are both Black. They are both excellent. And all of a sudden, it's like a choose your own adventure. 1-2 And then all of a sudden you have Ella and Louie, and you see Ella there and you see her who is kind of bouncing between all this. So I have three women in three different plays who are all triangular or all going into three different spaces. Like, to me, that's thrilling. And you hear the music through all of them, the influence of the Cotton Club through all of these pieces. And I don't know, I guess that's kind of what comes to mind at first between all of these incredibly strong women.
Thank you. Thank you. Sharing stories is so important, and it's never been sort of, I think, a more important time in our world's history to sort of share stories and be able to hear each other's stories. Now, I understand that recently crossing the border has a significance that it did not have before. And I'm talking maybe all borders, but also the border from the U.S. to Canada and vice versa. Why would you think it's important? Or maybe you could share some thoughts on why is it important to keep this cross-national exchange open?
I think if we stop it, then the border becomes solid. Every time we cross through something, we create air. We create a hole. We create room to breathe, to grow, and to share. As long as we have courage, we have to fight to go through these borders so that we can keep the air flowing for as long as possible. That's so important for what we do. I think, though, there's also the idea, in a way, and of course the border is real, But there's also the country of theater. Then, if we're going to talk about borders and countries, there's the country of theater. And if we're coming to the country of theater and it happens to be here right now where we're visiting, you're not crossing a border. You're just coming into your own country if you're coming, especially from the States, to visit us in Niagara on the Lake. This is your country, and that border then is an idea. I know it's not, obviously, it's very real. But I think there's something that we have to do to say our imaginations can triumph something that is challenging in this moment, or that there's something more rewarding that I will have courage to persevere. It is, and it can be uncomfortable, but we have to fight as clearly and as bravely as possible to keep the connection between us, because our health is dependent on one another in a really true way. And that's a part of resistance to closing off and becoming isolated, to living in further echo chambers, to not even entertain being in the company of people who might have different opinions than you on certain things, and then to just isolate yourself further. So I think it's really important, and I'll always respect people who feel that they can't, because that's got to come at a cost. But if you wanted a little nudge, or to have courage, or you just needed someone to tell you that you can, then do. And then, especially if you're listening in the States and you want to come visit us, we'd love to see you. We really would, because we're the country of theater, and we want you here. We do. Oh, I got a little emotional there. I'm sorry.
Me too. I was trying to hold it together, but thank you.
My bad. I'm sorry, listeners. I didn't mean to go on. So
what a beautiful note. Thank you very, very much. I always like to end every interview by asking, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid, or anything you'd like our listeners to know before we say goodbye?
Come to fill your cup, not only for the theater, but for the beauty of this place, for the streets that you can walk up and down, to be by the water, to see the gardens. Come for all of these kinds of reasons, any kind of reason. But if theater is a part of it, then that's really great too.
Kimberly, thank you very much for your time today. It's always such a pleasure and a great privilege to speak with you. I always feel filling my cup is filled after speaking with you. So thank you very much for your time today.
Welcome, Daniel.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kimberly. The Shaw Festival season runs until October 5th, 2025. Their holiday season, featuring Irving Berlin's musical White Christmas and the perennial favorite A Christmas Carol, opens November 1st, 2025. Tickets and more information are available at shawfest.com. This episode is produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.